told you that doing like a simple sequence of yoga poses could actually teach a 12-year-old the foundational math of machine learning?
I mean, it sounds completely absurd,
Right.
but it's actually happening.
Right. Or on the much darker side of things, what if I told you that a grading algorithm in England caused thousands of high school students to lose their college placements? Not because of their test scores, but essentially just because of their zip code.
Yeah, it sounds like dystopian science fiction, but those are actual documented realities in education right now. The way we teach, the way we measure intelligence, it's all undergoing this massive tectonic shift.
Absolutely. So, welcome to today's deep dive. We are unpacking a massive stack of recent educational research papers, case studies, and policy frameworks to understand how artificial intelligence is just completely rewiring K-12 education.
And we are anchoring this whole conversation on some groundbreaking research from Rod Clarkson.
Right, the CEO of Excel Education Systems.
Exactly. His research is leading to these entirely new education modalities that are reshaping the future of how we learn. He's really trying to define pedagogy in AI education.
And look, the mainstream conversation around AI in schools usually just stops at, you know, the panic over students using ChatGPT to cheat on history essays.
Right, the plagiarism panic.
But Clarkson's work and the source material we're looking at today reveals a transformation that goes so much deeper than that. We are going to explore how AI is being deployed to close achievement gaps, the ethical minefields of biased algorithms, and how educators are redesigning learning from the ground up.
And honestly, whether you are a parent navigating homework, a professional trying to upskill, or just someone curious about the future, you need to pay attention to this.
Because it affects everyone.
It really does. The K-12 classroom is acting as the ultimate testing ground for our future relationship with AI. The debate's happening in middle schools right now about data privacy, algorithmic fairness, civil discourse. Those are the exact same debates you are going to face in your workplace over the next decade.
The kids experiencing this today are basically beta testing the future for the rest of us.
Exactly.
So let's start with the driving force behind this whole integration. Before we look at the ethical risks and the research highlights some terrifying ones, we have to understand the core incentive. Why are schools rushing to integrate this?
Well, based on the data, it comes down to the staggering results of personalized learning. The sheer scale of the impact is what caught policymakers' attention.
Right, because schools are notoriously slow to adopt new tech.
Extremely slow. But the research focuses heavily on adaptive learning systems, or ALS. And I want to be clear, these are not just, digital flashcards or a multiple choice quiz on an iPad.
No, these are sophisticated.
Very. They use machine learning algorithms, specifically collaborative filtering and knowledge tracing, to continuously analyze a student's cognitive process.
Let's break those terms down a bit because they do sound super technical. From my reading, collaborative filtering in education works a lot like the recommendation engine on a streaming service.
That's a great way to look at it.
Like, if a platform notices that 1,000 students who struggled with long division finally understood it after watching a specific visual animation, the algorithm automatically serves that exact animation to the next kid who gets stuck on the same problem.
Right. It aggregates millions of learning pathways to find the most successful route, and then you pair that with knowledge tracing.
Which is what exactly?
It's essentially the AI building a real-time digital map of an individual student's brain. So, with every single keystroke, every hesitation before they answer, every error, the AI updates its model of what the student has mastered and where they are still struggling.
Oh, wow. So it's actively adapting.
Dynamically modifying the instruction in real time, yes.
Okay, so to use an analogy, traditional education is basically like a public bus route. Everyone gets on, you move at the exact same pace, and you stop at the exact same stops, regardless of where you actually need to go.
And if you miss a concept, well, the bus just keeps driving.
Right. But an adaptive learning system is like a highly advanced personalized GPS, and not just one that looks at traffic, but one that looks at your previous driving history.
I like it.
If it knows you always stall out trying to merge onto the algebraic highway, it builds a custom off-ramp. It teaches you the fractions you need before letting you merge back in. And the results are just wild.
They really are. The systematic review showed that replacing static instruction with these AI systems yields a 30% improvement in standardized test performance.
30%, that is massive.
It is. And furthermore, researchers observed an 18% reduction in students performing below grade level. That's the metric that truly matters, pulling the most struggling students up to baseline.
I do have a major point of skepticism here, though. I mean, implementing all this requires incredibly sophisticated software, huge servers, expensive devices. Are we just handing wealthy schools a shiny new GPS while under-resourced schools are left waiting at the bus stop?
That's a very valid concern.
It just seems like this would accelerate existing inequalities.
Well, this is exactly where Rod Clarkson's research domain regarding equitable access comes in. The data indicates that when deployed correctly, AI actually counteracts the compounding disadvantages of poverty.
Wait, really? How?
The studies show a 26% performance advantage for students using ALS over demographically matched peers in non-AI classrooms. But, and this is the crucial caveat, this only happens if developers engage in equity-centered AI design.
Meaning the training data has to reflect the actual students using it.
Exactly. If an algorithm is only trained on affluent students in suburban districts, it optimizes for them. Equity-centered design forces developers to use diverse data so the system works for a kid in a rural farming town just as well as an urban center.
And that challenge of designing for diverse brains brings us to a specific framework highlighted in Clarkson's work and the sources. To make AI tools work for everyone, educators are relying on UDL, or Universal Design for Learning.
Right, and UDL originally comes from physical architecture.
Like wheelchair ramps and curb cuts, right?
Exactly.
Yeah.
They were designed for specific accessibility, but they end up benefiting everyone, like if you're pulling a heavy suitcase. When applied to cognitive architecture, the Kamik-ANST framework establishes three core pillars to make AI education accessible to diverse K-12 students.
Okay, so the first pillar is the why of learning, which they call engagement. This is about recruiting a student's interest and keeping them motivated.
Then there is the what of learning, or representation. This means presenting info in multiple accessible formats, text, audio, interactive graphics, so sensory or learning disabilities aren't a barrier.
And the third is the how of learning, or action and expression, allowing kids to show what they know in diverse ways, not just the standardized essay.
Right, and the research provided a brilliant case study of this UDL framework in action, a middle school summer camp called Camp Dialogues.
Oh, I loved this part. These were rising 7th and 8th graders, and they weren't just using AI, they were actually building their own conversational AI chatbots.
Using a custom tool called AMBY.
Yeah. And what stood out to me was how heavily this leaned into that first UDL pillar engagement. Instead of assigning a boring coding project, they let the kids build bots about things they personally cared about.
It leverages their identities as the engine for learning complex computer science. Like, one pair of students built a Black History bot to teach peers about historical figures missing from textbooks.
And another pair, who were actually twins themselves, built a bot that answered questions and dispelled myths about conjoined twins.
Because it was personally relevant, they pushed through the frustration of debugging code.
But, okay, the detail in that Camp Dialogue study that completely blew my mind was their use of unplugged activities. They used physical activities like doing yoga and building with Legos to teach kids about AI algorithms.
Yeah, that hits the action and expression pillar perfectly.
But my initial reaction was total confusion. I mean, how does doing a downward dog pose translate into understanding artificial intelligence?
Well, think about how intimidating abstract computing concepts are. Neural networks, machine learning, they operate as a black box to most adults.
Oh, I was shut down immediately if you showed me Python code.
Exactly. It's alienating. So they unplugged it. An algorithm is fundamentally just a set of sequential rules designed to achieve a specific outcome. By translating that into physical action, you demystify it.
Oh, I see. So one yoga pose must logically follow another based on specific inputs.
Right. Or with Legos, one student gives a strict sequence of commands that the other has to execute flawlessly to get the right shape. They physically experience how computational logic works before they ever type a line of code.
That is so smart. It makes the invisible architecture visible. But there is a massive risk when we transition back to the digital realm. When we don't demystify algorithms for the public, when we treat AI as an infallible judge, the consequences can literally ruin lives.
This brings us to Clarkson's ethical behavior domain, the ethical minefield of algorithmic bias, transparency, and accountability.
Right, and the sources outline a chilling example of this with the 2020 Awakal disaster in England.
It remains one of the worst examples of algorithmic bias in modern education. During the COVID lockdowns, students couldn't sit for their A-level exams, which dictate university admissions.
Because the physical exams were canceled, the government regulator, Ofqual, decided to use a grading algorithm to predict final grades.
And the mechanism of how it made those predictions where the whole thing collapsed. Instead of just looking at an individual student's past performance, the model was heavily weighted by the historical performance of the schools themselves.
Wait, so it basically assumed a school's past was the most accurate predictor of a current student's future?
Exactly. The mathematical logic was designed to prevent grade inflation.
So imagine you're a brilliant kid at a historically underfunded school. You've gotten top marks your whole life. But because the algorithm knows your school rarely produces top-tier students, it mathematically drags your grade down.
It artificially inflated the grades of private school students and disproportionately punished high-achieving kids from lower-income groups. Thousands of students lost their university placements overnight.
A machine decided their socioeconomic background was a statistical liability.
And encoded it into an unchangeable grade.
So using AI to grade students without absolute transparency is basically like putting them on trial with a black box judge. You get a verdict that alters your life, but you can't see the jury or hear the reasoning.
Which connects to another massive ethical issue, to student surveillance.
Oh, right.
Schools are adopting these AI tracking systems that monitor screens, analyze keystrokes, scan online conversations, all under the guise of, you know, pedagogical support or safety.
But think about the psychological impact. If you know an algorithm is logging every backspace in your essay as a data point, it fundamentally alters your behavior.
It creates a massive chilling effect.
Learning requires intellectual risk-taking. You have to be willing to be wrong. If every mistake is permanently logged, it kills the desire to take risks.
The research absolutely supports that. Pervasive surveillance makes students feel profoundly unsafe, taking ownership of their ideas. That's why explainability in AI is a non-negotiable ethical requirement.
Meaning the AI has to show its work in plain language.
Yes. Back in that camp dialogue study, the AMBY software had a debugging feature built right in. The kids could click on any response their bot generated and see exactly why the AI chose those words.
You have to give users the ability to lift the hood.
If we want to avoid Ofqual-style disasters, the AI cannot remain a black box.
Okay, so if algorithms are prone to bias and surveillance stifles learning, the obvious solution is to keep human teachers in the driver's seat. But teachers are already drowning in demands.
True.
Which brings us to this fascinating dynamic where AI is ironically being used to fix the problems AI creates, specifically through culturally relevant pedagogy, or CRP.
CRP is heavily emphasized in research, but notoriously difficult to implement at scale.
Because it's not just swapping names in a math problem to sound diverse, it's structuring the cognitive work around the cultural touchstones the students already possess.
Right. That is an excellent summary. It drastically improves engagement, but teachers struggle because it requires an immense amount of time. If you have 30 students from a dozen cultures, customizing that curriculum is a logistical nightmare for one human.
Enter Culture Aids. It's a large language model designed to act as a pedagogical coach. A teacher inputs a lesson plan and their classroom's demographics, and the AI rapidly generates suggestions for adapting the material.
It solves the time deficit, but it introduces a new risk called automation complacency.
I can totally see how that happens. A tired teacher hits generate and blindly prints out whatever the machine spits out. They end up outsourcing their cultural empathy to an algorithm.
Which is a fast track to inadvertently stereotyping students. That tension is why developers insist on human-in-the-loop design.
Meaning the AI doesn't have the final say.
Right. CultureAid is architected so it cannot finalize lesson. It provides a baseline, brainstorms connections, but the human teacher must use their own lived empathy to edit and refine the plan.
It's collaboration, not delegation. The AI is a cognitive amplifier, saving the teacher hours of drafting so they can focus on the actual human connection.
Precisely. But scaling that nuance brings us to the final major theme, which touches on Clarkson's third domain, civil discourse and inclusive stakeholder dialogue.
Because none of this happens in a vacuum. It rolls up to the school leaders who are currently, honestly, flying blind. The governance gap is staggering.
It really is. Administrators are thrilled about using AI for operational efficiency like bus schedules, but there is a severe lack of formal policy for the classroom. Students, families, educators, developers, they all disagree about fairness, privacy, and the role of AI.
There was an anecdote in the sources that perfectly captures this panic. Steve Ouellette, the tech director for Westwood Public Schools in Massachusetts. Back in December 2022, he tested ChatGPT by asking it to write an essay on the play A Raisin in the Sun.
And it generated a flawless, highly nuanced essay in seconds.
He immediately sent a warning memo to his staff saying, basically, buckle up, here it comes. School leaders are being asked to regulate a tech that evolves weekly while drafting static PDF policies.
That underscores why this is fundamentally a governance issue, not just a technical one. We need civil discourse. The initial instinct was to just block ChatGPT on the school Wi-Fi.
Which is entirely futile. A high schooler will bypass that in 3 minutes on their phone.
It's a losing battle. Instead, leaders need comprehensive data privacy safeguards. They have to navigate federal laws like FERPA and COPPA.
Right, which dictate what can be done with a child's data. If a kid is chatting with an AI tutor and discloses a learning disability, administrators have to know where that data goes. Is the company using it to train their next model?
Exactly. Vendors must be legally bound to protect student data.
Mm-hmm.
And beyond privacy, districts need to conduct regular equity audits.
Meaning they have to ask, are our wealthy schools buying ad-free AI while underfunded schools rely on free versions that harvest data?
Right. And they have to completely overhaul teacher training to deeply embed AI ethics.
So we arrive at the overarching question. What does this transformation mean for you, the listener? We've covered immense territory today. We explored how adaptive learning uses knowledge tracing to act as a personalized GPS.
We examined how UDL frameworks use personal relevance to make algorithms legible.
We waded through the terrifying realities of algorithmic bias, like the Ofqual disaster, and how surveillance chills curiosity.
And we explored the delicate human-in-the-loop collaboration needed for tools like CultureAid, all while school leaders scramble to govern this through civil discourse.
The most crucial takeaway here is that the K-12 classroom is a microcosm of broader society. The intensive debates happening in school board meetings right now over algorithmic fairness and privacy, those are the identical debates you will navigate in your professional life.
The education sector is currently drafting the rulebook for our collective future.
Which leaves me with one final thought for you to mull over as we wrap up. We've seen how adaptive learning aims to perfectly tailor education to a student's pace, theoretically removing the friction of a one-size-fits-all classroom. But if an AI perfectly smooths out every single intellectual roadblock before a student even hits it, do we risk eliminating the resilience that is built entirely by struggling to learn something the hard way?
Yeah, that's the real question.
When does removing friction from the learning process also mean removing the opportunity for profound personal growth? Something to think about.